One of my favorite stories was told by Dr. Jack Hiles. He said, all of us have seen examples of people who have kept a good spirit in adversity. Years ago, I had an Uncle Harvey. He was a layman, a multimillionaire. I never saw a man who had a better spirit than Uncle Harvey. He affected me as far as my personality is concerned. He was always on topside. And that's the way I want to be. When I walk up to my pulpit on Sunday morning, I want to be on topside. I don't want to walk out so my people can heal me. I want to heal them. I don't want their spirit to lift me. I want my spirit to lift them. I might insert, I feel the same way there. He said, one day Uncle Harvey had a stroke, and he couldn't speak well for a while. But though he had a stroke, his spirit was in good shape. Then he had a little heart attack. He got his heart, but it didn't get his spirit. His spirit rushed and sustained his infirmity. Then he got sugar diabetes. Though the illness got his heart and his mobility, his spirit was in good shape. Uncle Harvey went into the hospital to have his leg amputated. I sat beside his bed when he got back from surgery. I wanted to see what kind of shape his spirit was in. They rolled him in, and his children were all gone. I was the only one beside the bed. Sure enough, there was that stub just below the knee where his leg had just been amputated. I wondered how he would react when he woke up. He began to come out of it. He looked up at me, and the first words he said were these, "Son, I learned something in that operating room." I knew what he was going to say. I knew he was going to say, "Jesus was with me all the way." But that's not what he said. I knew for sure what he was going to say. I just knew he was going to say, "God's grace is sufficient whatever the situation." But that wasn't what he said either. He said, "I learned something in that operating room." And I said, "What is it that you learned, Uncle?" Now in Psalm chapter 109, if you'll look with me please, I want to show you tonight the real reason. Is everybody listening? Say amen. I want to show you tonight the real reason why most people who get a divorce, get a divorce. And I'm not referring to mental cruelty, and I'm not referring to adultery, and I'm not referring to half a dozen other reasons that people get a divorce. I'm going to show you tonight why young people rebel. I'm going to show you tonight the number one thing that shuts off communication between parents and children. I'm going to show you tonight what is often behind squabbles and fights in churches. In fact, this is the reason why most people who get upset and leave a church do so. This, what I'm going to give you tonight, is probably the number one reason why people leave a church. Many people have left or lost excellent jobs with great pay and a great future because of this same reason. And finally, there are people who have physically died because of this reason. In Psalm chapter 109, verse 2, David describes something that has happened to him. He said, "For the mouth of the wicked and the mouth of the deceitful are opened against me. They have spoken against me with a lying tongue. They compassed me about also with words of hatred and fought against me without a cause. For my love, they are my adversaries." He says, "I love them and they were made themselves my adversaries against me. But I give myself unto prayer. And they have rewarded me evil for good and hatred for my love." He says, "I gave them good, they gave me evil. I gave them love, they gave me hatred." Now look at verse 22. Read verse 22 out loud with me, would you please? "For I am poor and needy, and my heart is wounded within me. The word wounded there is a very interesting word in the Hebrew. It means my heart is profaned, defiled, desecrated. My heart has been polluted, wounded within me. This thing that these people have done to him has caused this to happen to him. Now turn over to chapter 147. Psalm chapter 147, and look at verse 3. In fact, you might read that with me as well, if you will, please. Psalm 147, verse 3. Let's read together now. He healeth the broken in heart and bindeth up their wounds. The word wounds there means a pain, a hurt, an injury, or a sorrow. God heals the broken in heart. He binds up their wounds. He's like a doctor who comes along and sees their wounds and binds this up. He wraps it and cares for it. Now turn to Proverbs chapter 18, verse 14, a key verse in the Bible in this area and a key verse for everyone. This is one of those verses that every one of us here tonight ought to memorize. I would strongly encourage you to do so. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 14 says, "The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity, but a wounded spirit, who can bear?" Would you say it with me together, please? The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity, but a wounded spirit, who can bear? This is one of the most picturesque verses in the Bible to me. I want to illustrate it for you. Dr. R.G. Lee was clearly one of the greatest preachers of the 20th century. And just a few weeks after his 90th birthday, now let me think, he went to heaven late 70s, early 80s, something like that. And he was in his 90s when he went to heaven, and he was preaching right into his 90s. Tremendous, eloquent preacher, often referred by many as the prince of preachers of the 20th century. Just a few weeks after his 90th birthday, he was in Garland, Texas, preaching. He was going to preach his most famous of all of his sermons, a sermon that he preached over 1,000 times, if I remember correctly, Payday Someday. About 6 o'clock, he'd gone out to get something to eat. He got on the elevator to go back to his room and get ready for the service. And on the elevator, 3 men attacked him, 90-year-old man, hit him across the head, knocked him unconscious. Well, when he was discovered shortly thereafter, he was rushed to a local hospital. It was about 6:30 in the evening. They examined him and put 9 stitches in his head. They found he had a brain concussion. The doctor came and said, "Dr. Lee, you're going to be all right. We're going to keep you overnight for observation." In his deep South Memphis drawl, he said, "Sir, I can't stay overnight. I'm preaching Payday Someday at Lavon Drive Church in about an hour." The doctor said, "Oh no, Dr. Lee, you're staying here overnight." "No, sir. If I stays here overnight, I'll report here after I preach Payday Someday at Lavon Drive Church tonight." "But Dr. Lee, you have 9 stitches in your head." "Well, I'm sure if I have 9 stitches in my head now, I'll still have 9 stitches in my head after I preach Payday Someday at Lavon Drive Church tonight." "Dr. Lee, you have a concussion of the brain." "Yes, sir, Doc. And it'll still be there when I finish preaching Payday Someday at Lavon Drive Church tonight." "Dr. Lee, you're out of your mind." "Yes, sir, and if I'm crazy now, I'm sure I'll still be crazy when I finish preaching Payday Someday at Lavon Drive Church tonight." And he did go, and he did preach Payday Someday at Lavon Drive Church that night. Now, I gave that to show you something. Dr. Lee had a physical wound to his body. Those hoodlums, those thugs had taken advantage of a 90-year-old man, but they could not, however much they damaged his body that night, they couldn't get his spirit. His spirit was still strong. He's still moving forward. I want to speak to you tonight on the subject, how to treat a wounded spirit. Have you ever seen anybody, not with a wound to the body, but with a wound to the spirit? Notice what he said in Proverbs 18:14. The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity, but a wounded spirit, who can bear? You know, the most deadly wounds you may experience in life may not be a wound to your flesh. Your most deadly wound could well be a wound to your spirit. There have been many times when someone should not have lived as far as medical science was concerned. I'm thinking right now about a man who was a member of our church a number of years ago. And at Thanksgiving time, I guess it must have been 13, 14, 15 years ago, he was eating Thanksgiving dinner and just felt right in the center part of his chest. And he just felt something there. He went to the doctor the next few days sometime and found he had a cancer in him the size of a football. They didn't expect Steve Davis to live. You'll remember us praying for him. We prayed for him for days. Then we prayed for him for weeks. Then we prayed for him for months. Then we prayed for him for years, because that man just wouldn't die. I mean, and the reason, I want to tell you something. I know there's a God in heaven, and I know God heals, and I know all that, and I believe all that very strongly. But I want to tell you a key reason that man wouldn't die was because his spirit was still strong even in the midst of his tremendous infirmity. I've dealt with people. I remember visiting the hospital one day a number of years ago and visiting the burn unit of the hospital. And in the burn unit, sometimes you see some really, really difficult situations. And there was this person in the burn unit who had faced some severe burns all over their body. And they wondered if that person was going to make it. They made it. You know why they made it? Because their spirit stayed strong. Because they said, I'm not going to give up. You've heard stories of somebody mangled in a terrible automobile accident. No reason for him to be alive, but the doctor says, we don't know why he's still alive, but he's still alive. And if he's still alive this time tomorrow, he's got a greater chance of being alive the next day. And that next day, he's still alive. And the doctor says, we don't know why he's still alive. We still don't give him much of a chance to live. But if he lives through tomorrow, he'll have a bigger chance the next day. And the next day, he's still alive. And the next day, he's still alive. And the next day, he's still alive. And a few weeks later, he's still a little bit mangled, but he walks home from the hospital. And the reason he walks home from the hospital is not because his body was not terribly mangled. It's because his spirit wouldn't give up. The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity. There was a lady in Chicago several years ago who was attacked, cruelly stabbed repeatedly, and left for dead. And she not only lived, but she identified her attackers and got to see them put behind bars. She had a spirit that wouldn't give up. Now, I know there's such a thing as killing somebody, no matter how strong their spirit is. You and I both know that. But I'm just saying to you, there is something about the strength of a spirit to hold on in spite of the deadliness of certain physical wounds. And the most deadly wound you may experience in life may not be a wound to your flesh. Your most deadly wound could be a wound to your spirit. I just told you that I've seen people go through terrible things and they didn't, and they survived. I could give you the other side of that too. And you've seen this as well if you've lived for a little while. I've seen it a number of times. I've seen people who were faced with a situation that was not necessarily deadly, that was not necessarily life-threatening, that was not necessarily the end of it all, but for them it was, because they gave up. And they'd lay there in the bed and they'd say, "Doctor, I don't want you to treat me. I don't want help." And they would feed them and they would try to treat them. And they'd look at the doctor and they'd say, "I just wish you would let me die. I just don't want to live. I don't want to keep on going. Just leave me alone." You've heard me tell the story before, but it's one that's continually fresh in my mind because I lived through it as a teenager and I remember it so profoundly. I had an uncle. He was actually a great uncle of mine who had had a successful business in Spartanburg, South Carolina for a number of years. If I remember right, he had a butcher shop. And he got up in years and his children said to him, "Dad, why don't you just sell everything and give it to us and we will take care of you." And so he said, "All right, that sounds good to me." And so he sold everything, gave everything to them, and they just dumped him in a dump of a nursing home and forgot him. They didn't go see him, nothing. I mean, they left him in this place. They hadn't seen him for months and months. And my grandmother, I remember her going and picking him up at that nursing home and bringing him to her house. I was there the day that it happened. And he was in the house and he started screaming and crying, "I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying." Oh, it was a horrible sound just to hear him, an older man. I guess he was in his 80s at the time. And he's just screaming, lying there on the... My grandmother had a bed set up in the kitchen, den, living room sort of area of her house where everybody just sort of gathered. And there was a little couch-like, cot-like bed right in there. And he was right in there laying on that. And he's just screaming, "I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying." I remember just thinking, "Oh my goodness, what's the matter?" And so she called the nursing home. She talked to the staff there. And they said, "Oh, don't worry about it. He does that all the time. He does that in a few days. He just says, 'I'm dying. Somebody help me. I'm dying. Somebody help me. I'm dying.'" And the wailing and the crying, it would just really get to you. And they said, "Just ignore him. He's all right. There's nothing wrong with him." And my grandmother and we gathered around and we tried to calm him down, talk to him and visit with him as much as we could. And then finally we took him back to the nursing home. And my grandmother told me what happened. One day she said, "Son, you remember your great-great uncle?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "You want to know what happened?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am. I'd like to know what happened." She said, "You know how he's there at the house that day and he kept saying, 'I'm dying. Somebody help me. I'm dying. I'm dying. I'm dying.'" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "He was at the nursing home just a few weeks ago and he did that every week, every few days. I'm dying. Somebody help me. I'm dying. Somebody help me." And he died. And they walked in and they checked him and they saw no reason for him to be dead. Physically speaking, there was no reason for him to die. It was probably just listed as old age. The truth is, it should have been listed as a wounded spirit. What did he say? "The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity, but a wounded spirit, who can bear? Who can keep going when you've got a wounded spirit?" It reminds me, a good comparison to this might be what happened during the Civil War and incidentally has happened in other wars as well. This article I have says, "Statistics compiled by the Army Medical Department after the war in the Federal Forces showed 4 persons died of sickness for every 1 person killed in battle. And deaths from disease were twice those resulting from all other known causes. Disease was terribly prevalent. It was not uncommon for new regiments to have 2/3 of their strength on the sick list, and among older units, the ratio of 1 sick man to 4 or 5 well ones seems to have been fairly normal. In the Union Army as a whole, the heaviest incidence of disease came early in the war, and individual units suffered most during the first few months of their service. the sick rate for the year ending June 30th, 1861 was 3,882 cases for each 10,000 soldiers, and for the next year was 2,983. The trend, that's like one third. The trend thereafter was generally downward, the rate for the last year of the war being 2,273. The peak of sickness each year usually came during July and August. In 1862, two peaks were experienced, the second coming in October, owing to a large influx of new troops. The disease which usually struck first in epidemic proportions was measles. Medical reports show that attacks usually came within a few months of a unit's organization and recurred after each large addition of recruits. Among new regiments, cases numbered from 20 to 300. The principal factor in the variation being the proportion of country troops. A private in a recently organized rural regiment wrote his parents in December of 1861, "The measles went through our regiment in such a manner that out of 560 men, only some 250 are on duty. They're more sick than they were well." Measles showed a preference for the winter months. Ordinarily, it ran its course in 3 or 4 weeks. Usually, it was mild, but undue exposure and improper care frequently led to pneumonia and other serious complications. Private John McMeekin wrote his mother from near Vicksburg in February 1863. He said, "We buried Simon Groves yesterday. He died with the measles. This is what killed the most of our boys. They would take the measles and have to lay out in the rain and storm. They'd only last about 2 days." I visited Gettysburg Battlefield in Pennsylvania and other battlefields. And it's interesting, if you go through and you read the history of the Civil War, you'll be amazed at how many people died in battle and how many more people died of sickness. And you know, I think we would be amazed if we could make the parallel. How many people actually die in the battle of the service of the Lord and how many die because of a wounded spirit? What did he say again? The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity. The Spirit will kick in and sustain your infirmity. But if you get a wounded spirit, who can bear it? What are you going to do about it? How do you know if somebody has a wounded spirit? You walk into a doctor's office. He checks your temperature. He asks to look at your tongue. He looks at your eyes. He looks at your ears. He looks at your throat. Sometimes people cover up what's wrong with them. But you know, if you look closely, if you'll act like a spiritual doctor and look closely, you can almost always tell if somebody has a wounded spirit. How can you tell if somebody has a wounded spirit? One way you can tell is a wounded spirit is when they're angry and mad. You can sense anger in Psalm chapter 109. When you read about David and you read how he says, "I'm poor and needy and my heart is wounded within me." Read that whole chapter and notice how he is he's feeling anger and resentment. A second way you can tell if somebody has a wounded spirit is when there is a communication shutdown. When somebody just clams up, just don't want to talk. See, good communication manifests itself two ways. Talking and touching. When people are talking or when they are reaching out, touching others, then there's usually good communication. But if you watch a child, I remember a number of years ago when my third-born daughter Gina was still a little girl. And I remember spanking her and then finding out that what I was sure I saw with my eyes was not what I thought it was. And I had to go back and apologize to her. And right after I spanked her, we had the habit of hugging our girls and loving them. But I remember when I reached out to put my arms around her, she pulled away. And right then when she pulled away, I knew that there was something wrong. And then I got to examining and found out that it wasn't what I thought it was, and I had to go back and apologize. Dad, don't wait till there is open rebellion to deal with a wounded spirit. If you have a child, I don't care how old they are, if you have a child who feels uncomfortable with you just reaching out and touching them with the proper kind of a touch on the shoulder or kissing them on the cheek or whatever. I got a 22-year-old girl and a 20-year-old girl at home right now. If I were to walk up to either one of them after the service tonight, kiss them on the cheek, and I saw them flinch like this and look at me and like, what are you doing? I'd know I had a problem right then. I know when I reach over and kiss them on the forehead or kiss them on the cheek or kiss them on the head and they smile, I know that the communication is right. I know that the relationship is right. How can you know when somebody has a wounded spirit? Depression and weakness. Turn and look at, well, it's right across the page here in my Bible. Proverbs 17:22 says, "A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones." You know what you ought to do if you... I've told other people this before. If somebody has a severe disease of some sort, one of the best things they can do is get themselves in a situation where they're laughing a lot. Get some videos of some old, decent comedy programs and sit around and watch them and hee-haw for a while. Get some reading material that is humorous. Why? Because a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. I could give you testimonies. This is a totally different message. I've got some material on it I've been holding sometime. I want to preach on that. I could give you testimonies tonight of people who were deathly ill with cancer and decided that they were not going to sit around in a depressed state all the time. And they got some humorous things and just sat around and started laughing. And literally, these were not even Christian people. They laughed themselves back to health. How could that be? Because a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. I want to tell you something. A merry heart will do you more good in many cases than the doctor pushing you some pills. And I'm not totally against all the pills, but I'm telling you, sometimes it's good for you to have a laugh. Sometimes it's good for us to have somebody who can come up here and tell some jokes. I can't tell jokes. Y'all figured that out a long time ago. But sometimes that's good. Even if they're corny jokes, sometimes it's good. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine. But a broken spirit, that's the same word as that word in 1814 where it says wounded. A wounded spirit, who can bear? Here it is over here. A broken spirit. A broken spirit, a wounded spirit, dries the bones. What's it mean? It saps and drains away your strength. It saps and drains your energy to live and to feel good about life. To get up in the morning and say, "Glory to God, look at this. I get served God today. Hallelujah. I got some opportunities ahead of me. I've never had this day before. I'll never have this day." That's the way you ought to face every day. Hello. You ought to get up in the morning and say, "Thank God, never had this day before, never have this day again. Opportunity to do something for God, opportunity to be a blessing to others." And hey, a broken spirit dries the bones. A broken spirit takes that out of you. You get up in the morning and you say, "Another day, another dollar, another day, another job, another hour." I want to tell you, a Christian who loves God and senses the presence of God and senses a purposeful life won't get the blues every Monday because it's time to go back to work. They'll say, "Thank God, I get served God today." A wounded spirit, who can bear? A person with a wounded spirit who gets sick may die instead of getting well. A teen with a wounded spirit may run away from home. A Christian with a wounded spirit may backslide. A church member with a wounded spirit may leave the church or stay and stir up trouble in the church. A worker on a job with a wounded spirit may either leave or get fired from his job, regardless how good the job is or how high the pay is. A depressed person with a wounded spirit may take his own life. I've dealt with that before. I've had to preach suicide. I've had to preach funerals for suicide victims before. What happened to them? They got a wounded spirit. They couldn't keep going. A husband or wife gets a wounded spirit in their marriage. Often wind up getting a divorce. And you ask them what happened. Let me tell you something. I have never been able to find any Christians where there was a man and a woman, and both of them are right with God, and both of them are growing Christians, who wound up in a divorce court. Did you hear what I said? A man and a woman, both of them right with God, both of them growing in the Lord, both of them serving God, both of them in church, and they wound up in a divorce court. But here's what you hear. You ask almost anybody who's getting a divorce, what happened? They say, well, I just couldn't take it anymore. Now, would you please notice this? This does not say that a wounded spirit is unbearable. Thank God it doesn't. It says a wounded spirit, who can bear? How can you bear it? Person gets a wounded spirit and leaves the church. You talk to them, they say, I just couldn't take any more hurt. A wounded spirit is not a hopeless situation. A wounded spirit may be the deadliest wound of all because we can't figure out what to do about it. It's just sort of there. And the persons, what's this? The persons who caused it may not even care. If we had a physical wound, we would know what to do. But a wound of the spirit? You can't see it, you can't touch it. But you can definitely feel it, and it definitely hurts, and you feel weakened. How many of you ever had a wound of the spirit? Let's see your hand. You know what I'm talking about? You ever had a wound of the spirit? So, how does it happen anyway? The Bible describes several ways. Proverbs 15:13, it says, by sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. Same Hebrew word as wounded. By sorrow of the heart, the spirit is wounded. I especially think here of a father or mother who loses a child. I cannot imagine, I cannot even conceive of the wound to the spirit. To the spirit. The extreme sorrow wounds their spirit. By sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. Or they may experience terrible rebellion in a child. And by sorrow of heart, the spirit is broken. It's also possible for you to feel like God has been unfair to you. In Job chapter 6 verse 4 it says, the arrows of the Almighty are within me, the poison whereof drinketh up my spirit. He said it's like God, the Almighty, has shot me full of arrows, and the poison in the tips of those arrows is drinking up my spirit. That's what Job said. The main way the spirit is wounded is by words, by the tongue. Psalm chapter 109. Back there in verses 2 through 5, go back and look at it. I won't take time right now, but he talks about what they've said, how he's done good to them, and they've returned his good with evil, and they've said these wicked things about him. If you still got your Bible open there in Proverbs, glance back at chapter 15, please. Look at chapter 15, verse 4. It says, in fact, read this out loud with me, would you please, all together? A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit. Look at that. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit. He says where there's a perverse tongue, where somebody said something they shouldn't say, then it creates a breach, a break, a wound to the spirit. One of the most inaccurate rhymes of all time is this. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Did y'all ever hear that? They used to say that a lot when I was a boy. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I used to think that was true. I mean, I heard that so many times, I thought, hey, that must be true. I got to thinking about it one day, and I found out that's not true. Sticks and stones will never hurt you as bad as words will hurt you. Proverbs 18:8, look at it. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. What is a talebearer? Watch me. A talebearer is somebody who picks up a tail over here and takes it over here. Picks up a tail here and takes it here. Doesn't matter whether it's true or not, it's just talebearer. It may be true, it may be false, it may be exaggerated, it may be deceitful, it may be accurate, it may be inaccurate. It's totally... the words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. There have been times... I've been a pastor for almost 26 years now. I want to tell you, there have been times when I would hear something somebody said, And I would feel it right here, right after I heard it. Just feel it right in the pit of my stomach. The words of a talebearer's wounds. You've heard, many of you have experienced this. Most of you have experienced this at some time or other. You hear something, and something has happened or whatever, and we were in Africa. We got a call, and it appeared that while we were over there, it appeared that there was some real danger to one of our family members back here. And I remember as soon as I heard that, you could feel it like it was right here. All right? It goes to the innermost parts of the belly, especially people who are close to you can wound you. Listen to Zechariah chapter 13, verse 6. And one shall say unto him, what are these wounds in thine hands? Then he shall answer, those with which I was wounded in the house of my friends. That's a messianic prophecy. One of these days they'll say to Jesus, what are those wounds in thine hands? And the answer is, those with which I was wounded in the house of my friends. He came to his own received him not. The Jews rejected him. They put him to death. They cried out, his blood be upon us and on our children. He was God in the flesh, but he was fully man. And I want to tell you, I've wondered sometime, think about what it would be not just to be standing there and having been beaten with the cat of nine tails until your back is like a plowed field, not just have a crown of thorns pressed upon your head, but to be totally innocent and the people that you loved and healed and blessed and preached to and cared for and came to die for and to live, and they are screaming, crucify him, let Barabbas go, crucify him, release Barabbas, crucify. Can you imagine what it felt like to the Son of God to hear those words? The Bible talks in Psalm 55 about cutting, burning words. One dad said to his 15-year-old daughter, I wish we had aborted you when you were a baby. Can you imagine the cutting of those words? Then he started calling her all kinds of cruel names. A stepfather said to his stepchildren, get out of here and leave me alone. You don't belong to me. If I had my way, you wouldn't live with me. In the book of Judges, the story of Jephthah, his brother said to him, you have no right to our inheritance because you were born of an harlot, and they ran him out of the house. A husband says to his wife, I wish you were more like so-and-so, and is referring to another woman. One of the most devastating, destructive things that a man can ever do to his wife is compare her to another woman. Laughter is used by some people to cause a wounded spirit. Years ago, before I understood better, I'd seen so many people do it, I thought it was the thing you do. I'd put down my wife, and then I would say, oh, I was just kidding. And then I found out, you might be kidding, you might be laughing, you might be joking, and you could still be stabbing somebody. I had a horrible complexion problem when I was a teenager. I remember walking into church in the back of Northside Church in Gaffney, South Carolina one Sunday morning, and two other boys walking up, laughing at me, pointing at me, and calling me pimple face. Pimple face! And somebody stabbed me on the inside when they did so. In Psalm 22:7, says, all that see me laugh me to scorn. Gee, that's a messianic passage. The Bible talks about how they mocked him and scorned him. Many actions may also create a wounded spirit. A father promises his son he's going to do something with him, and the son looks forward to it, and the father forgets and then acts like it wasn't important anyway. Happens in churches. A large church here in the United States, just before their daughter was supposed to graduate from high school, a family in the church got a notice in the mail saying, your daughter cannot officially graduate. Her bill is not paid. And she walked through the line and received an unsigned diploma. And later the people at the church and the school said, "We're sorry, we made a mistake." But forever, she remembers walking through the line and getting an unsigned diploma. So what are you going to do with a wounded spirit? First of all, if you ever wound someone else's spirit, and you know that you have, I'm glad to tell you, the same tongue that cut them open will provide healing if you'll only let it do so. Proverbs 15:4 says, "A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit." Remember the first part of the verse? A wholesome tongue is a tree of life. What is a tree? What is the tree of life? In the book of Revelation, the tree of life is for the healing of the nations. A wholesome tongue is for healing. Do you know where this message came from? This message came because one day I was sitting in my office many years ago, counseling with a couple. And they had been through one of the most horrible situations that a couple could ever go through. And this husband had damaged his wife like few men I have ever seen could damage. And I looked at him and I said, "Sir, you don't realize what you have done." He's one of these fellows always joking. And yet his jokes were cutting, piercing, burning, fiery words. I pulled a dagger out of my desk. I held it up. I said, "I want you to take this in your hand." I handed it to him. He took it in his hand. And I said, "Do you want to know what you have been doing to your wife?" I said, not only with the things that you've been saying and doing, but then with the laughter and the joking, trying to act like it's no big deal. These put-down words you have been saying every time you do it, it's just like you took that dagger and stabbed her. And you have been stabbing and stabbing and stabbing over and over and over again, and now you've stabbed and you're sitting here in my presence twisting, twisting, twisting this knife. He never got it until I said that. And his countenance broke. And he began to realize that what I was saying was true. And I said, "You have got to put the knife away. You have got to decide, I'm not using any more harsh language in this home. I am not going to say these harsh, unkind, cruel things to my wife anymore. Put a guard on your lip and never, ever do it again. Every time you do it, it's like you're stabbing her." And then I said, "The same tongue that has been cutting her, piercing her, burning her, hurting her, will heal her." "How do you do it?" I said, "You look at her and you say to her, 'Honey, I didn't realize what I was doing. I didn't realize how badly I was damaging you. I'm sorry. I really am truly sorry.'" And I mean, he turned and did that, and she began to weep, and they both began to weep. And I said, "Now wait a minute, you got to understand something. Just the fact that you have said this right now is not going to be enough. A wounded spirit, who can bear?" What happens if you have a really, really bad wound? If you have a really terrible wound, and you want to get it well, you don't just dress it one time. You're going to have to change that bandage again. Clean it and put salve on it. Dress it again. And the next day you're going to have to do it again. The next day you're going to have to do it again. The next day you're going to have to do it again. And I said, you're going to have to come back and say over and over and over again, every day for weeks, "I'm sorry, so sorry," and really mean it. And every time you do it, you're cleaning and dressing the wound until one of these days she will say to you, "It's all right. It's well now." I remember a number of years ago counseling with a couple where adultery was involved. It was so foolish how it happened. one reason I believe in modest dress, the main reason I believe in modest dress between men and women, between anybody in public, is because the Bible teaches that. Another reason I believe in it is because I've seen the damage where it has not been practiced. And I want to say this carefully and discreetly, but this couple and another couple who were neighbors of this couple, they would go boating together, and they would wear the attire that goes with that. And it was extremely immodest. And both these couples were around each other, and this man and this woman finally wound up in terrible sin. And they're sitting in my office, and I'm trying to help them resolve this difficulty. And I looked at him, and I said, "You have no idea the damage you have done to your wife because of your unfaithfulness." And I said, you're just acting careless about it." I said, "You're acting like it's no big deal." I said, "You don't understand." And I pulled the dagger out. I said, "I want to show you what you've been doing to your wife. By your carelessness, it's like you don't even care what you've done. I mean, yeah, you admit what you did. Yeah, that's bad. You shouldn't have done it. But man, you've been, and every time you're like, why doesn't she just forgive me and go on? It's like you're just stabbing her again. I said, "You have got to be truly broken, truly sorry for this. And then you've got to be tender and loving toward her. You've got to be like a nurse, gentle and patient, understanding the time she may be irritable. And then come back again and again saying, 'I'm sorry, so sorry,' again and again. You're cleaning and dressing the wound. Do it again and again until one day she says, 'It's all right, I'm well now.'" And what happens is it enables a person to go from the act of forgiveness through the process of forgiveness into the state of forgiveness. Now, wait a minute. Anybody still with me? Say amen. Here's where a lot of people are. I was wounded, had a wound of the Spirit, and it's His fault, and there's nothing I can do about it. I want to tell you, there are some wounds you can keep from getting. I see people getting wounded, they don't need to get wounded. Somebody comes at you with the sword of their tongue, you can fend them off with the sword of the Spirit. Psalm 119 verse 161 says, "Great peace, princes have persecuted me without a cause, but my heart standeth in awe of thy word." And in verse 165 he said, "Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them." Also, there are people who create their own wounded spirit by taking up someone else's offense. Somebody else had a problem with their mom or dad or their husband or wife or their boss or another employee or brother or sister in Christ. They tell you about it. You hear about it. You take up the offense. That's the reason the Bible says in Psalm chapter 15, if you want to dwell in God's holy hill, who is it gets to dwell in God's holy hill? He that taketh not up an offense. There are people, if you go back, there are people, many people who used to be in church, not in church because of a wounded spirit they got from somebody else, and they don't even know what happened to them. Now, let's say somebody wounds me, and they walk away and do nothing to help. Hear me, that doesn't mean I have to lay there and die. What are you supposed to do if somebody wounds you? You immediately give yourself spiritual first aid. What is that? You treat the wound to the spirit by forgiving without being asked. When Jesus was hanging on the cross and said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," how many people were standing there saying, "Lord, we're sorry"? All of us had sinned against Him. He is saying, "Father, forgive them." None of us were even there that day. And yet He said, "Father, forgive them." If somebody wounds your spirit, either knowingly or unknowingly, then walks away without doing something about it, Who is going to be in the worst shape 6 months from now if you don't treat that wound, you or them? I've seen Christians who have poured dirt and filth into their own opened wounds until spiritual gangrene set in. Until the wound was horribly infected, horribly perverse, and it's like, how can I ever get healed? That's when people wind up dividing. That's when reconciliation becomes difficult. That's when divorce takes place. That's when division takes place of all kinds of sorts. Let me tell you, I don't care what somebody does to you. I don't care how you feel about it. Don't pour filth into your own wounds. You say to yourself, I'm going to forgive, even if they don't understand. You say, they don't understand what they did. They're not really sorry. Did you know none of us really fully understand what we did to Jesus either? That's the reason forgiveness has to initiate. Primarily the one who is done wrong, because the people who do wrong seldom understand how wrong their wrong was. You remember the story I started with? Dr. Jack Howell's Uncle Harvey, who had had a stroke, then he'd had a heart attack, and then he got diabetes, and then he needed to have his leg amputated. Dr. Howell's walked in, was sitting next to his bed, wondered how he would react when he woke up. He started coming out of it. The first words that he said was, "Son, I learned something in that operating room." Dr. Howell thought he was going to say, "Jesus was with me all the way." He thought he was going to say, "God's grace is truly sufficient." He thought he was going to say, "God is with you in the valleys of life." He said, "Son, I learned something in that operating room." He's just coming out of the anesthesia. Jack Howell said, "What is it, Uncle Harvey?" He said, "I learned the best cure in the world for an ingrown toenail." They amputated his leg. But, are you listening to me? They couldn't amputate his spirit. Merry heart doeth good like a medicine. And he decided, no matter what he went through, he was not going to be defeated. And you know what's interesting? If you go to Hebrews chapter 1, you'll find that Jesus was anointed with the oil of gladness above all of his fellows. Happiest person to ever live was Jesus Christ. In Isaiah 53:5 it says, "He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed." He was wounded for our transgression. Same Hebrew word that's used in Psalm 109, verse 22. "I am poor and needy, and my heart is wounded within me." Jesus was deliberately wounded for you and me so that He could give healing to us. And sometimes wounds come our way. Whenever they come our way, the other person might treat them. If they don't treat them, we ought to treat them ourselves. But we also ought to take that wound and use it to bring redemptive healing power to somebody else, to take what we've been through and instead of growing bitter, decide we're going to use it to be a blessing and a help to somebody else. Would you bow with me, please?